Welcome to Earth Matters, environmental justice stories from so-called Australia and around the world. Produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country in Naarm, Melbourne, and broadcast across the continent via the Community Radio Network. I pay my respects to elders past and present of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and of the many lands our content reaches. I recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded, and I affirm that there can be no environmental justice without justice for First Nations peoples across the globe. I'm Mia Audrey.
We have everything that we need, actually, to make the difference, to really transform the system, to be in right relationship with country.
Last month, I shared audio from a symposium organised by A Climate for Art, a collective of artists, arts workers and organisations intent on mobilising their sector for climate action. I wanted to dig deeper into this rich intersection and hear how cultural producers are seeding change in the arts and wider culture, and what they're noticing along the way. Here I am in conversation with Aliki Reid and Lana Nguyen, the core organisers behind A Climate for Art, and Angharad Wynne-Jones, a mentor to ACFA as well as a strategist and facilitator for Creative Climate, the new national peak body for arts and climate.
Thank you so much for coming in for Earth Matters. Lana, I'm wondering to start, could you tell me a little bit about what you consider is the role and responsibility of arts and cultural workers in responding to the climate crisis?
Well, I guess we were working as arts workers and we were frustrated with the sense of, you know, art being made around the climate crisis, but a lot of the infrastructure behind the arts not actually responding to the climate crisis. So they were still investing in fossil fuels. There wasn't like larger, I guess, institutional responses to climate. So we wanted to see more of that, as well as having more complex critical dialogues around climate change, because it feels like it's been a really underfunded sector for a while. And so arts organizations are in survival mode and not actually seeing this larger crisis that is, an existential crisis for everybody.
Wonderful. And A Climate for Art, it's a two-pronged kind of response, by my understanding. You're focusing on divestment as a practical method of addressing climate, but you're also bringing conversations into the space. I guess from each of you, I'm curious of your roles in it. How did the organisation come about and what's the journey been like so far?
So there's two of us here, me and Aliki, who are part of ACFA, and ACFA is part of this larger organisation called Creative Climate, which is where Angharad comes in, which is a new federally funded body for art and climate.
ACFA is A Climate for Art. Yes. We love to abbreviate things in the arts.
Yeah. You especially love abbreviations.
ACFA. I've turned
it has a great ring to it. I don't blame you. Never miss
ACFA,
an excuse.
You know.
Wow. Is that new? Did we just hear innovation on air?
I've been coining that from the start. Great. I just wanted, waiting for the perfect moment.
But I think it has been a bit of a journey. I think when we started talking to arts organisations, everyone has that sort of sense of goodwill, but there is a generalised understanding of, you know, the climate crisis means dealing with recycling or, you know, solar panels and these very bureaucratic responses that often have been, you know, campaigns from, you know, PR companies, from oil.
You know, focusing on the individual, right?
Yes. Yeah. And accounting for like your problem instead of like a systematic approach. And I think one of the things that we've really tried to push is to see climate crisis as a cultural crisis, and looking at the larger, deeper rungs of worldview and how we organize together as central pillars. And divestment was a really good way to step into that, because suddenly you're working out where your money is actively invested into and starting to recognize those stories. But I think beyond that, there's a deeper cultural conversation about how we're in this space, and that it's not just something that we replace with renewables, but something that we actually need to think about in terms of values and culture.
And Creative Climate is a collection of organizations, including ACFA, but also including Center for Rewilding and Green Music Australia and PVI, who are based in Boolu.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, to your point, Lana, that sense of we've got to do things differently, we've got to work together, we've got to figure out how we collaborate, how we connect. And that has been a big learning and enjoyment and pleasure, actually, in the creative climate gang of four with a couple of facilitators, Catherine Jones and myself, and then an amazing sustainability advisor consultant, Matt Wicking.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're I think all aligned in direction, but kind of maybe looking at different systemic levers that we're looking to shift, and but underlying that sense that it's a cultural change that needs to happen. Yeah.
Do you feel that Creative Climate has quite a clear vision of what you want your work to look like and what I guess you want the arts industry to look like more generally in its engagement with the climate crisis?
Yeah, we were just chatting about this earlier. I think I'm got a bit of New Year allergy to vision. I feel like, you know, there have been a lot of visions and a lot of missions in the corporate world. So what that actually means for us, I think, is, you know, to be in place, to be... to meet each other where we are, to meet ourselves where we are is really important. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I think there are phenomenal skills and knowledges and expertise and, that we all have that we have everything that we need actually to make the difference, to really transform the system, to be in right relationship with country.
Mm.
And getting there obviously is a different thing. But I suppose the vision of that, of like, yeah, to be in right relationship, to be accountable, to be responsible, but to do that in a way that is, to the benefit of First Nations people primarily, on whose land we've settled and are visitors. Yeah.
Yeah. I really resonate with what you're saying about vision fatigue, and I think there is something really important too in challenging a focus on outcomes, on endpoints, right? And that's part of unpacking white supremacist culture and colonial mindsets. I am curious for all of you as well, opening up the conversation. Art has obviously been used as a weapon of colonization, but it's also a vital tool of resistance and has been since colonization began here. How do colonialism, climate, and the arts intersect?
Yeah, great question. The way that I've tried to shift my focus and organize around art as a methodology has been drawing from its roots in my understanding of art from a Pacific context, more broadly, and seeing it as a tool for meaning making, but then also a space for knowledge transference and trying to resist the sort of colonial capitalist like capture of art as a profession or as an industry
or as a product
yeah, and as a over glorified tax haven for the asset class, so like wanting to sort of draw a holistic sort of idea and value around art to be the driving force for the work that A Climate for Art and Creative Climate undertake together, as well as our collaborators in Green Music Australia and Centre for Rewilding. I think it's a lot of our sort of the spaces that we meet together is at like the understanding of world building and how we're able to affect change in the communities that we're responsive to, that we're responsible for, and how to then build that into systemic thinking or to expand that and to invite people into that way of doing and being, which is never easy work, but it's feels necessary. And a lot of the work that we do together sort of hinging upon many years of collaboration, like Angharad and Lana and myself have been sort of working together under Angharad's mentorship for maybe 5+ years now. And then Angharad has brought with her a legacy of collaboration and friendship in this space across the arts and ecological thinking and climate, organizing around climate in previous roles. So, yeah, it feels nice to do that work together.
Yeah, awesome. Angharad, did you want to speak at all to bringing that experience into ACFA's work?
It's been amazing to work with Lana and Aliki and others in this space. I think intergenerationally. You know, I think when I began, I felt like all we needed to do was protest and we could stop it and we could reverse climate change. And, you know, clearly that's not happened.
We've all had that moment. Yeah, yeah. We've all had the realization. Yeah. The reality check.
So I feel like I definitely lost my way, lost hope. And actually through engaging with Lana and Aliki and others in the movement, I feel like that shift or that understanding of, you know, relationality, the importance of that, the importance of not thinking non-extractively about pretty much everything that we're doing, feels like a really beautiful, strong, guiding kind of principle, which I think Lana and Leakey are really exemplify and through A Climate for Art, but yeah, in other parts of their lives and their art making as well. Yeah.
How do you these days respond to the emotional reactions to the challenge of working in this space? You know, it sounds like you've been on a journey with that and maybe you're in a stronger place than you have been. What does that look like day to day?
Yeah, I think for all of us probably, you know, it can be very different day to day. There's no escaping, you know, the fires that are happening, the flooding. So all of that, I think, puts your body into kind of terror and fear. And if you're not experiencing, you know, people and friends that are. So, yeah, I think we're in a very highly adrenalized state, and the necessity and obligation, or not maybe not obligation, but the necessity to calm one system down so that you can listen, so that you can take action, that you can do that from a place of clarity, kindness, hope, is really important. And it's a struggle for us all every day, I reckon, but doing it together is the most brilliant thing. And I think doing it with the thing that it's both challenging about Creative Climate and also incredibly energizing is all the different divergent viewpoints that we have that are constantly kind of challenging and energizing the space in a really brilliant way.
Do you see a role for art and the arts in helping culture, society, people on this continent grapple with the emotional experience of watching climate change unfold around us?
Absolutely. I think it's critical to it. I mean, what art is, you know, when you remove the extractive constructs around it that it's been kind of pigeonholed into in many ways, you know, the simplicity of storytelling, of collective listening, of making things together, of being in relationship to each other, of ceremony, of ritual. We talk about that a lot, of how, what new ceremonies, what new ways can we pay respect to the country that we're on.
And experimental thinking as well, I think, because that's been a really, while I think we've been talking a lot about, you know, the links between art and culture, there is also contemporary art has had this really great lineage of deep experimentation and the possibility of bringing anything into its fold. You call that art and it's art. And I think there's something really generative in terms of the ways that we can think through that medium because of that. And because climate has almost felt like it's been stuck for a while in terms of the types of conversations we have. And I guess there are precedents in the UK of similar types of work between art and climate that have also been trying to get culture on the table in climate negotiations, and just having this expansive way of thinking about it, having a embodied, like multiple knowledges come into the conversation on a felt level, I think is really powerful, and probably I suspect why it's also been left off the table for a long time.
And it's like in the last year, through Mundiacult, the UN sort of focus on cultural policy, they've been able to sort of shift the bar to bring culture into the conversation with the intent to sort of make sure that that's a driving factor within climate organizing. But even still, a friend of ours who attended those the conference itself was Jen Ray, who's part of Center for Rewilding, was sort of talking about the focus there for culture being heritage and
History.
Design and yeah exactly. And so like our I guess the position that at least I take and that a lot of the comrades in this space take is around sort of driving that a bit further and sort of broadening the scope of what, as you were sort of mentioning, what art can be or is perceived as and yeah, sort of contending with the breadth of culture that we are able to experience.
Yeah, because sometimes art can be used in these spaces as a sort of instrumental tool that it should be, you know, conveying climate science. And while those things are important, I think there are more important ways that art works. And it would be great to broach that more with the environmental sector, because I think sometimes it is about,
it's art about climate rather than art that expands our ways of being in the world, right? Which is more the project.
Exactly.
Yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
That was Lana Nguyen, Eliki Reid and Angharad Wynne Jones of A Climate for Art and Creative Climate, reflecting on art's role not simply as a conduit for climate knowledge, but as a catalyst for deep cultural reflection and change. You're listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. We're hearing from organisers at the intersection of climate change and the arts. With Angharad's mentorship, Eliki and Lana are bringing artists and arts organisations together for critical climate dialogues, with a focus on divesting from banks and superannuation companies that support extractive industries. I asked them if any art interventions have given them hope recently.
Are there any projects that you folks have seen recently, any artworks you've engaged with recently that have been exciting for you that you feel a part of this reckoning in the space?
I mean, I went around recently. It was on Invasion Day with a musician, a Wiradjuri musician, Peter Swain, and we were going to different parts of his country, and there was a group of musicians, and they were trying to find different ways of responding to country and how settlers can begin to listen and actually, think about, I guess, the geography of a place, but also the multiple layers of history. And it was done through like experimental improvisation. But it was really, I think it is along the lineage of the work that we're trying to do, which is trying to listen to climate change rather than it be something that we have to conquer or something that we have to fear, but it's actually like country speaking. And so what are the methods that we all need to try to tune into to be able to listen to what it's saying when it's, you know, when there's an algal bloom in South Australia or when there's fires really close to us? What are those things actually saying, and how do we make the space in our lives to be able to listen to it? Very deeply.
Beautiful. It sounds like an amazing event.
There was a I didn't see it or experience it firsthand, but there was a project that was happening in Aotearoa that a friend of mine, Guy Ritani, was telling me about, where there was an algal bloom in one of the lakes, and the Māori weavers, like a group of women weavers, came together to weave and then overlay their weaving over the lake, which was then able to sort of treat the algae in the river, and sort of drawing upon traditional practices to respond directly to climate change. Like that sort of like really visceral, direct, and then also like tangible and like sensorial practice seems like really exciting to me, and sort of drawing upon and reviving or maintaining cultural practice. That feels like a really beautiful precedent that I would love to sort of have more engagement with, but I've only really heard secondhand.
I think for me, the what is an artwork and what is a work of culture feels an interesting thing to explore. And I feel like when we had a gathering at Bundanon last year in October, which was a gathering of all of the folk in creative climate, and, you know, I think we called it a lab, or we called it a
residency.
These words that, you know, conform to, ways of gathering that are kind of legitimized in the arts world. And I think you could as well call it an artwork, because for me it did all the things that great art and great culture do, which was bring us bring us together, challenge us, support us, build knowledge together, create ceremony, laugh, cry, all of those things. Mm. And often I think that we have been kind of robbed of that possibility through the capitalization of arts.
Yeah.
And so returning and holding on to the process and the function of gathering together, I think, is an artwork and is really incredibly valuable in every which way.
Yeah,
that's so true. I feel like it's like the cultural decisions we make are pivotal to the work. So one of the things that we're going to try in our meetings all together is to have this open, you know, unallocated time at the beginning just to be able to really check in with each other and have conversations surface that maybe aren't on the agenda. And I think that's also a metaphor for what art can do. It's this open space that can be explored, that can have something that doesn't really make sense come into it.
Absolutely.
And then there's a truth that is shared through that.
Yeah. It's back to your comment around experimentation or risk-taking. It kind of enables us to take risks that otherwise, would be harder to do. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I love that image of art as a doorway out of the agenda and into the limbo that exists outside. Yeah, I mean, that's I don't think people love to be in meetings with artists sometimes, but I see it as a generative and beautiful act to take us away from the agenda.
Sometimes you've got to herd the cats, you know.
Yeah. How can you herd them if there are any cats? Awesome. Yeah, I'm really hearing this role that I know is so central to a climate for art and to creative climate, your approach to the work that you're doing. Art as this cultural response to climate change, art as a tool for increasing our imaginative literacy, for expanding our sense of what's possible. As people who are in the space, what do you sense, what do you hope for about what's possible for art and climate? What are your pie-in-the-sky visions about arts in a climate-compromised world?
I mean, one of the ones that I keep coming back to is really aligning culture and nature together. So I think they've been separate in settler mindsets for a long time, and people have been disconnected from the cultures that connect them to nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, I think with Angharad's conversation around what an artwork is, also seeing those things as possible artworks, like it's the sense of how we can be together, the sense of how we gather, you know, that it doesn't have to be a painting on a wall. It can be friends in a room together really discussing something, or it can be time spent listening in silence. And I think those things are things that I really want to open as possibilities of cultural response to climate change. And those things can be immensely joy building and, you know, realigning for yourself, I think, when you're like, wow, like, I didn't realize that I needed that.
I'm hearing you folks refer to so many different collaborations that are part of both these projects, the Climate for Art and Creative Climate. It's amazing to be drawing so many different nodes in the network together. I know that in a Climate for Art, there are 27 member organizations at the moment, if I'm right. What are some examples of the organisations that have signed on, and how are they working towards climate-aware practices?
Yeah, there's I think we've sort of touched on in like previous like public things like the symposium. It's just interesting for us to think about organisations like West Space, who have partook in sort of long form and public engagements around composting and sort of breaking down all of the sort of intricacies of composting, and then getting people in to engage with it. Part of it is around like us trying to champion the work that is already happening. And so like, getting people who are willing, but then more so trying to platform the initiatives that people are already doing. So I guess sort of like working between a coalition of the willing as well as like people who are just keen to really drive change, and trying to create enough collaboration and conversation, a bit of dialogue between the two, so that we're able to initiate more action from and create sort of resources that are open source to sort of spread the load a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are some of the barriers that you're hearing arts organizations are facing in taking more decisive action about climate?
money, 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 time.
The conversation was always going to get to money at some point, wasn't it?
Isn't it? I think, well, as I think Lana spoke earlier, you know, particularly in Victoria, we're going through a really tough time with arts funding being, absolutely hammered. And it's not as if small to medium arts organisations weren't doing it tough anyway. I think that's a real thing. I do perversely also think it's an opportunity because really when there's very little that is functional or possible with the kind of resources that are coming down from the funding orgs, why not really go to the heart of it and think about, you know, the deep question of what
is
culture?
You've got less to lose, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Like, really. So I feel strangely hopeful that actually there will be more energy. I feel like there already is more energy. Year of the horse, as we say, you know, like, why not get on board and, see what's possible. And I think that, you know, collective, collaborative energy is the thing that will see us through in all regards. Mm-hmm. So ACFA's work in terms of actually offering that as a gathering place, as a regular meetup to, you know, whether it's to do some volunteering at Coorandook or to catch up with other people in the sector, that's so critical to building momentum and feeling like you're not alone in your small to medium trying to, you know, change the world by yourself. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for all you're doing to connect arts organisations with each other and with the broader movement for climate action. And thanks so much for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Angharad Wynne-Jones, facilitator of Creative Climate, and Aliki Reid and Lana Nguyen of A Climate for Art on empowering arts organisations to make change together. You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's national environmental justice program. I'm Mia Audrey. We've heard from three among the many concerned voices within the arts sector speaking up about climate. Angharad Wynne-Jones, Aliki Reid and Lana Nguyen shared their visions for arts in a climate-compromised world, pointing to collaboration and decolonisation as the bedrocks of a life-oriented response. If you're an arts worker or enthusiast who'd like to join the conversation on art and climate change, you'll find a wealth of ways to connect in the show notes for this episode via 3cr.org.au/earthmatters. Thanks for listening. That's all for now. But tune in next week for more environmental justice stories. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR, NAM, Melbourne.